I could entitle the message tonight, What is Sin? What is it? The title of it is Do Thyself No Harm, but I want to talk to you on the subject of what is sin. What is it? Now, tell me, for example, Pastor, why it's wrong to listen to rock music. Did some preachers get together and just decide some things they didn't want anybody to do? Is that what sin is? What determines what's right and what's wrong? Is there a conspiracy on that is somebody trying to keep you from having any fun? Is that what sin is? What is sin? All right, here's what it is. Sin is that which God knows is not good for you or for someone else. Folks, there's not a single thing that's wrong to do that's best for you to do. Did you hear me? I said there's not a single thing that's wrong for you to do. What's wrong, for example, with disco and rock and roll? What's wrong with it? What's wrong with that kind of dancing? It's wrong because it's not good for you. Because I can't see it. Aren't you glad that there's some things that you can't see? Aren't you glad God knows something you don't know? Wouldn't you hate to have a God as dumb as you are? I would. I'd hate to have a God as dumb as you are. Aren't you glad that there's somebody that can sit up there? You know, for example, here's a fellow in the tower at O'Hare Field. And he says to the pilot, he says, now, I want you to go 2 degrees to the right. And the pilot says, well, man, I don't see I need that. What's the use of that? He said, look, do what I say. I've got the radar. I've got the screen here. I know the location of every airplane that's circling over O'Hare Field. Now, do what I say. You see, there's someone in that tower that knows some things the pilot does not know. And I hate to shock you young folks, because this is going to come as a great shock to you. But there's some people that know some things you don't know. Your mom and dad for one, for two. And me for another. I just can't see it. You don't have to see it if somebody else that's smarter than you that has already seen it. As you got in a sense, you listen to what they say. You see, somebody said, well, what's wrong with women wearing pants? I don't think wrong with that. It's not good for you. Well, you say, well, how now, why is it, what's not good about women wearing pants? Well, in the first place, it does not make feminine ladies. Well, you say, I just can't see it. But you just proved my point. Well, I'll do what I want to do. See what your pants have already done to you? They've already made you rebellious, haven't they? I'm saying that it's not good for a lady to sit like a man sits and walk like a man walks. Look, I just didn't see some ladies' pants one day and say, I tell you what, I just don't think I like those old women. So I'm going to say they're wrong. No, I'm preaching now what every fundamental preacher preached 25 years ago. And you say, well, what's wrong with it? It's wrong because it's not good for you. Well, what's wrong with taking dope? Not good for you. What's wrong with drinking? It's not good for you. God says, look, everything that is wrong is God saying, do thyself no harm. Do thyself no harm. Now, look. I've been preaching I've been pastoring over 33 years. Over 32 years. And been preaching 34 years, been called to preach 35 years tomorrow night. Don't you think that in these years of having absolutely pastored hundreds of thousands of young people, don't you think that I have seen what makes them happy and what makes them unhappy? Don't you think Brother Hiles has seen There's not a preacher in America. Not a preacher in America who's seen any more young people turn out right than this preacher right here. Now, that's the truth. You can say what you want to say, and you can say I'm being egotistical. I'm not. I'm being factual. There is not a preacher in America who has as many pastors and churches around this world as I do now. I mean, my preacher boys, not talking about college students now, not the Hiles Edison students. I'm talking about students that have grown up in our churches. I know something about who's happy. I know something about who's not happy. I know something about wrecked lives. I know something about joyous lives. I know something about fulfilled lives. And those who turn out right are those who trust someone who's seen the ingredients and recipe for happiness and the ingredients and recipe for wreck and ruin and warns you about what will make you unhappy and tells you what will make you happy. By the way, do you know that's why the devil has to advertise sin? The devil advertises sin because the devil has to pretty sin up to make it look decent. So he advertised it. He puts a beautiful lady with a bottle of beer in her hand or a martini in her hand. And he implies that if you'll drink that stuff, you'll be as beautiful as she is. And that's the devil's dirty lie. The truth is, she's not beautiful. She just got a bunch of paint on her face and a bunch of goo on her face. She's not beautiful. She has no lovely blush. She has no innocent look. She has no natural beauty. She has the taint of sin. And the devil says, he puts a bottle of Seagram 7 in a man's hand, and he puts a nice suit on that man and gets a good-looking man, and he dresses him up and says, if you'll drink Seagram 7, this is how you'll turn out. Now, fellows, forgive me, but if you'll drink Seagram 7, that's how you'll turn out. Now, you think you're good guys, but I'm talking about the wrecked lives of men who listen to the devil's advertisement. And there's nothing that makes me any madder than to turn the radio on or turn the television set on or pick up a magazine or a newspaper and watch how the devil advertises sin. So he'll cause our people to be lured into his trap. And then before you know it, they've wrecked their lives. Now, I'll say again, the things that have been preached from this pulpit in 1979 concerning what's right and what's wrong are things that this preacher has proven by counseling with tens of thousands of people who turned out happy, who turned out unhappy. Listen, you know why petting is wrong? Necking is wrong? Because it's not good for you. It's not good for you. You know why parking in Lover's Lane is wrong? It's not good for you. Oh, you said, good for me. Wait till the end of it. Sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Be not deceived, God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. The wages of sin is death. And sin does not turn out right. And sin does not make happiness. And sin does not make one content. And sin does not make one's life turn out right. And young people, listen, before you waste and ruin your life, there are a dozen young folks in this room right now who are just about to go off the deep end and waste and ruin and wreck your life. And I'm not being some fuddy-duddy. I'm not being some party pooper. I'm not being somebody pouring cold water on your happy life. I'm being the best friend you've got. In God's name, don't do it. You're not going to be happy in the end. You're not going to do it. You're not going to do it. Sin never has turned out right. Sin never has made one person happy. Sin never has. It'll give you a thrill for a while, but it won't make you happy. Now, in this story, I'm going to appeal to you tonight through a different motive. I want you to listen carefully. I normally appeal to you to live for God on behalf of others. I normally appeal to you to serve God because others need you to serve God. I have tonight in my Bible a group of marvelous deliver the Hiles. Thank you for the money. We wouldn't have got presents if it weren't for the money. I got an electronic baseball game and a game called Bonkers. Dear Brother Hiles, Thank you for the money you gave us. I am 14 years old and got a 22 rifle. Dear Brother Hiles, I'm 35 years old and bought an atomic bomb with the money that you gave me. Don't you feel warm inside? This message has not turned out like I planned. Dear Brother Hiles, how can I thank you and the people of First Baptist for the way that you have helped my family this Christmas? I just barely escaped an eviction notice last month. I really didn't know how I was going to pay the rent. The check that you sent to me, along with what I have been able to earn, will take care of the rent and buy some groceries. My parents and my wife's parents know I don't have a regular job, or unable to help out. However, they did send presents for my three children, and so forth. And then here's another. It says, praise the Lord and thank you, First Baptist Church, for the very best Christmas we ever had. Through your kindness, we had turkey dinner and many presents for three delighted and surprised children. Now, dear Brother Hiles, thank you for making our Christmas one we will never forget. The expressions on our children's faces came very close to showing what your love has done for us. By watching the church and the college staff and faculty, we've learned what the other's life is all about. Thank you for being like Jesus. And those are just letters. Now, that's one reason to do right. It's because of the joy it brings to others. And normally I come to you and appeal to you with that motive. Or sometimes I'll ask you to serve God because of the needy. Or sometimes I hold before you the eternity-bound souls of people and say people are going to go to hell if you don't serve God. And you ought to serve God because folks are going to go to hell. But tonight I want to take the selfish approach. I want to appeal to you to live for God because it is best for you. I would appeal sometimes for a broken-hearted mother. And I will say you ought to serve God because you're sending your mother to a premature grave. And some of you are. There's a young lady in this room tonight. Her mom and dad, one, are going to die prematurely because of her wicked life. And I think that's a good enough reason to live right. And by the way, if your mom and dad are heartbroken because of the way you're living, that's a good enough reason in itself for you to straighten up and behave yourself. But for those of you who don't care about your mom and dad, you don't care if your mom's heartbroken, you don't care if you're a dad who's loved you and cared for you when nobody else would, you don't care about them. And quite frankly, I can't even comprehend anybody being so ungrateful and so unthoughtful as to not to care what mom and dad think. If your mom and dad don't think you ought to drink, then you ought not to drink if you think it's okay. I mean, if it's going to break their heart and wreck their lives and ruin their future and cause them to despair, you ought to quit it. But some of you don't care about that. So I want to talk to you tonight to your own selfishness. I want to say, do thyself no harm. He was a keeper of the jail. Paul and Silas were in the jail. They had been condemned to die. Now, by the way, the keeper of a jail, if the bailiff, or the, what they call the sheriff of the jail or keeper of the jail, if a prisoner assigned to him escaped, then the keeper of the jail had to suffer the same punishment that prisoner would have suffered. For example, if a prisoner was in jail for 3 years and he escaped, then the prisoner went to jail for 3 years. If a prisoner was in jail for capital punishment, was going to be killed, assassinated, or electrocuted, or hung, or go to the guillotine, then if the prisoner escaped, the keeper had to be executed in his place. So when Paul and Silas all of a sudden were freed, and their hands were freed, their legs were freed, and the earthquake came and shook the jail, and they were about to escape, and the jailer decided to kill himself. Why kill himself? Because that's what's going to happen to him anyway. And they shouted, do thyself no harm! Do thyself no harm! In olden days, suicide was a sign of courage. Perhaps he was exemplifying courage. It's still that way in Japan. You know that in Japan, students commit suicide at the end of a semester in school. If they fail, there's a great rash of suicides in Japan because failure is such a disgrace. And, for example, you know, Demosthenes poisoned himself when told that Alexander's ambassador had demanded his surrender. Isocrates killed himself rather than surrender to Philip of Macedon. Cato, rather than submit to Julius Caesar, wounded himself unto death. They dressed his wounds. He unbound them. They dressed his deadly wounds again. He unbound them again. They dressed them again. He unbound them a third time and died. Hannibal died by self-inflicted poison. Brutus committed suicide. Napoleon, after the disaster at Moscow, Napoleon carried with him a poison all the time. One time, his servant heard him in the nighttime rise and go get a glass and put something in the glass and to drink it, and heard a groan, and the servant came and rushed him to medical attention, and Napoleon's life was spared. William Cowper, who wrote "O for a Closer Walk with God," and "There is a fountain filled with blood," tried to kill himself, went down the Thames River to a certain spot to jump in. Somebody was there. He didn't do it. He decided to go throw himself on a knife. He threw himself on the knife, and the blade broke. He decided to hang himself by a rope, and the rope broke. It's sort of like that gal in New York City the other day who tried to commit suicide, and I was up there, and that's not why he's trying to commit suicide, but I read in the newspaper how that she jumped off the 87th floor of the Empire State Building, and a wind, gust of wind caught her, blew her back to the 86th floor, and she landed on a ridge 2.5 feet wide. And somebody asked her why she tried to commit suicide. She said, "Because I can't ever succeed at anything." And she couldn't succeed at killing herself either. But anyway, Paul was not saying to some coward, "Do thyself no harm." This fellow was committing what was an act of heroism, he thought. He was doing that thing he thought was just and right and noble to do. And Paul said, "Do thyself no harm." And that's my message to you tonight. Do thyself no harm. Hey, you with a bottle in your hand, you with a beer in your icebox at home, you're about to do yourself some harm. You're about to wreck your health. You're about to wreck your family. You're about to ruin your future. You're about to lose your job. You're about to have a wreck and spill somebody else's blood on the highway. I say, pour the stuff out and don't drink the stuff. I don't care if it is Christmas time. Do thyself no harm. Hey, you with marijuana in your purse. Hey, young person with I'm talking to you, young people, with marijuana in your purse and with pot on your possession. Get rid of it. It's not going to do anything but bad. It's going to do you harm. It's going to wreck your life. It's going to dull your brain. It's going to ruin your future. It's going to wreck your chances of having a good job and a home and a family and children one day. Do thyself no harm. Listen, there is not a day in the history of this world when preachers need to cry aloud against sin as much as we ought to cry aloud now. And yet, you hardly find a pulpit anywhere where anybody preaches holiness or righteousness anymore. It's almost impossible. Find anybody. But brother, when the pulpits don't cry against liquor, nobody's going to. And the pulpits don't cry against dope, nobody's going to. And the pulpits don't cry against rock music, nobody's going to. And the pulpit doesn't cry against the disco, nobody's going to. And the pulpit doesn't cry against the dope, nobody's going to. But bless God, for 1979, 52 weeks, we've stood up here and waved the flag of warning and said, "Don't do it, don't do it. Sin is black, sin is wrong." We've tried to make sin exceeding sinful. And to that end, I dedicate myself in the 1980s also. Hey, you, selling your virtue for a bowl of pleasure, do thyself no harm. Oh, but you say he's exciting. I said it'll be harmful to you. But you say it's fun. It'll be fun now. It won't be fun later. You come with me this year and sit in my office dozens of times where some young lady comes and she has carrying a baby in her body. She's been pregnant because she didn't listen to Brother Howell's preaching. Now, folks, I want you to hear me now. You fellas that dare would try to steal the virtue and chastity of a precious young lady, you're as sorry as the devil is. Sorry as you can be. Take your dirty hands off. And especially those of you that come here to the Hammond Baptist and Hearst Baptist young girls, and because you want a clean young wife, and because you want but somebody that's pure and chaste and clean, keep your paws off of them. Go find somebody as lustful as you are and marry them. But keep your dirty hands off our clean girls. And young ladies, in God's name, the reason Brother Howell stands up here and says, "Don't do it! Don't do it! Don't do it!" Because you're doing yourself harm. You wait till You stand at the altar like that precious couple did last night. I watch your kiss at the altar. I worry about some of you folks. I can tell you've been practicing too much. Come here with your mouth open about 3 inches with a French kiss. Stick your tongue out a little bit and slobber on each other at the altar. The honest, simple truth is you ought not to practice your kissing. Practice at the altar. Do it after you get married. But you say, what's wrong with a harmless kiss? Nothing. Nothing wrong with a harmless rattlesnake either. Nothing wrong with harmless cancer. Or a harmless black widow spider. Or a harmless tarantula. Or a harmless cobra. Or a harmless water moccasin. And some of you parents, I stand up here and I wave my hand and holler and scream and beg. And whether you know it or not, Brother Howes knows what he's talking about. I know what I'm talking about. But you parents says, I trust my daughter. Well, you may be a fool in other areas too. You better not trust your daughter, your son. You better stop and realize your daughter and your son are made of flesh. And it's time some of you decided to pay attention what the preacher's preaching behind this pulpit. Y'all get down and leave this church. Well, I'll pluck your tail feathers while you're leaving then. I'd rather every one of you walk out and hear the truth while you're walking than me to stand up here and cut my message and trim my message and let you live like a devil and your children go to hell and ruin their lives and their chances for happiness. It's time some of you deacons listen to what I'm preaching. It's time some of you choir members turn in once in a while. It's time some of you Sunday school teachers paid attention. And you laugh at me because the house kid never gotten. Our daughters weren't allowed to get in the car with a boy. They got married. Go ahead and laugh all you want to with your pregnant daughter. And I'm not condemning you. I'm trying to salvage somebody. The best friends you've got know where those kids are. If they're going to be out in the car, let them be out with somebody else. And be sure you know that somebody else. And you approve the couple therewith. The back seat of a lot of cars of teenagers sitting in this room right now are nothing more than red light districts. And I'm not talking about folks that don't come on Wednesday night. I'm talking about deacons. I'm talking about Sunday school teachers. I'm talking about school teachers. I'm talking about your kids and mine. I have had 5 couples come to me in 1979. The boy got the girl pregnant because the mom, one set of parents, left that couple at home in the house alone. Folks, I sometimes wonder if you got any sense. I don't care how sweet your daughter is or how fine a young man is she goes with. You're playing the fool when you leave your kids at home by themselves. Hey, you breaking the school rules, smart aleck, big time operator, I'll show that dumb teacher. He hadn't got as much sense as I have. He's got more sense than his little finger and you got in your whole body, you big bundle of foolhardiness and you idiot. Nothing makes me any madder for some little fellow about 16, 17 years old to think he's smarter than a school teacher is. You say, well, he's sort of dumb. How come you ain't the teacher then? Do thyself no harm. You say for the house, what's wrong with me talking back to the teacher? It's not good for you, that's why. It's not good for you. Not good for you. I'm not defending the teacher. Tonight, I'm talking to you selfishly. I'm saying you're doing yourself harm if you don't obey. You're doing yourself, young girls, when you don't make up your bed in your bedroom, you're doing yourself harm. You're doing yourself harm. Sin is that which is not good for you. Hey, you turning the pages of a pornographic magazine, do thyself no harm. Hey, somebody about to drop out of the church because of hurt feelings. Because the preacher preaches too hard, do thyself no harm. You're going to be the loser. What you better be doing is jumping up and down, clicking your heels, and thank God somebody's got the courage to stand up here and say what I'm saying to you tonight. Hey, you leaving my office and get in sin, do thyself no harm. Hey, you going your own way, forget mama's advice. Forget what dad says. Forget what the preacher says. Forget what the principal says. Forget what the school says. Forget what God says. Forget what the Bible says. You know what's best for you, don't you? You little foolish pipsqueak. You don't know what's best. You don't know what's best. You don't know what's best. I was sitting in my home one day in Garland, Texas. Been 26 years ago. A telephone call came. I'm sorry, I was in my office. Telephone call came on a Saturday morning, and a voice said, I'm going to kill myself. He said, you can't stop me. And I said, hold it, man. Let me have a chance to talk to you. And he told me his name. Let me talk to you. Let me talk to you. And he said, I'm going to do it, and you can't stop me. I said, wait, let me get there and have 5 minutes with you. He said, I'm going to kill myself, and you can't stop me. I heard a blast, and I jumped in my car and ran down to a little brick house about a mile and a half from where the church was. I walked in the front bedroom door and turned left. There's a back bedroom here and a front bedroom here. Walked in that front bedroom, and I saw that little man with his brains literally blown out on the bed. And I saw the doctor come, and I saw the people take his brains and hold his brains in their hand, and I saw his wife and children scream and cry, and I felt their hearts break. And I said to him on the telephone, don't do it! Let me talk to you! Let me talk to you first! He wouldn't listen! Now some of you haven't got any brains to blow out. You better listen to me. Moms and dads, you better listen to me. I know some of you have tried. It looks like the kids didn't turn out right. But I'll guarantee you one thing. If you listen to preaching that goes forth from this pulpit, your kids will have 10-1 better chance to turn out right. I'll guarantee you that. Do thyself no harm. Naomi's having a good time now. She's going down to Bethlehem. Naomi and Elimelech having a good time now. Looks like everything is fine. Ah, Moab's a fine place to live. And folks are so friendly down in Moab. And there's a lot to eat down in Moab. And there's a job down in Moab. But wait a while, she'll come back. As all people that journey into sin will. She'll come back. She'll someday soon go to the grave of her son Malan and wipe a tear with a broken heart, wishing she'd never left the will of God. She'll someday go to the grave of little Chilion, another son, and wipe a tear as she lays her only other son to rest, wishing that she'd stayed in the will of God. She'll go to the grave and see the grave of Elimelech, her dear husband, as she says goodbye to him. And she'll look in the mirror and see the scars of sin on her face, and she'll feel the hurt of sin. And someday she'll say, I wish I'd never left Bethlehem. And someday you'll say, I wish I'd never seen a bottle of liquor. I wish I'd never seen a cigarette of marijuana. I wish I'd never seen a rock music record. I wish I'd never seen a dark night in a car parked in Lover's Lane. I wish I'd never seen a bottle of beer. I wish I'd never seen the filth of Hollywood. Listen, you may be having fun now, but brother, it's not going to turn out right. It's not. It's not. Oh, but you say everything looks okay now. Yeah, the preacher used to preach on don't work on God's day and don't plant your crop on God's day. And one fellow walked up to the preacher and he said, yeah, this year, I planted my crop on Sunday. I worked my crop on Sunday. I harvested my crop on Sunday. And this year I had the biggest harvest this October than any year of my life. He said, what are you going to say to that, preacher? And the preacher said, God doesn't always pay off in October. Judas will take that coin, look at him. He'll feel those 30 pieces of silver. He'll look at him and say, boy, I've got them. They're mine. I've got them. He'll with glee place the kiss of betrayal upon the brow of the Savior. That's not the last chapter of the story. He'll hang himself and fall down that hill outside the city of Jerusalem till his bowels will gush out and people will walk by and look at him and say, poor Judas sold himself for 30 pieces of silver. Saul will stand on the king on the throne, and Saul will hold his scepter, and Saul will wear his crown, and Saul will enjoy wearing his royal robe now as jealousy grips his heart and murder enters his soul. He's okay now. But the last chapter finds him falling on his sword in suicide. Samson will put his head in the lap of the temptress now, and she'll stroke his hair. He'll reach up and touch her tender skin, embrace her warm body, enjoy the thrill of touching her lips with his now. But after a while, he'll be grinding at the mill, blind and grinding at the mill and bound. After a while, he'll be dead. Why? Because the Bible echoes still, the wages of sin is death. Jezebel's riding high now, but the dogs will lick her blood. Achan will see that coat now. Say, my wife would like to have that. He'll see that wedge of gold now and say, I bet that'd help me be secure, have security for the coming depression. But see him as he's outside the city, and the Israelites grab their stones and hurl their stones toward Achan, his wife, and his children, and see them as they're hit and as they groan and as they crumble and as the stones cover their bodies and as they die. I don't care what you say. I don't care how much you laugh at me. Listen, young people, I don't care how much you laugh at me. I don't care. Call me a nut. Call me a fool. But what I'm preaching is right. It's right. It's right. Sin never made anybody happy. Never did. Never did. And never will. The time that the devil thought he'd rebel against God and take over heaven and declared war on God, and the first sin entered the universe, till the last person 10 minutes ago who got drunk. And sin never made anybody happy. It ruined the Garden of Eden. It ruined Adam. It ruined Eve. It caused the human race to fall. It caused the wind to howl. It caused the roses to have thorns. It caused the serpent to have deadly venom. It caused the wild animal to roar through the forest with his murderous heart. It caused the cemeteries to open their mouths, and then the graves to open their mouths for dead bodies. It caused the hospitals to spring up. It caused the funeral homes to rise on the horizon. It caused the cemeteries. It caused the asylums. It caused the jails. It caused the tears. It caused the insanity. Sin, that's what messed up everything in Eden. It messed up in heaven. It'll mess it up in your life also. Lot will end up in Zoar. Lot will enjoy for a season the thrill of Sodom. He'll become an alderman, set at the gate. His daughters become very popular. And though he's a Christian, he'll go against the teaching of his uncle Abraham and against the teaching of Abraham's God in God's Bible. But he'll come down. And so will you. You young folks at Hammond Baptist High School that call the decent kids squares. I got a word for you. Idiot. Idiot. Fool. Poppycock. Cocky. Egotistical. The honest truth is, every student that walks through those doors out there ought to be a square. You will come down. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty together again. You will come down. You will come down. You will come down. Ride high now. Get your dad's car. Live it up. Get you some good music and get you a pretty girl. Go out to Lover's Lane. Smoke your pot. Drink your liquor. But you're coming down. What you better do is you better not go your route. You've gone down the road you're choosing to see how things turn out down that road for others who've traveled your road. Now what you better do is you better not listen. Here's the thing about it. You young folks, you better take the advice of somebody your age or a year older that knows nothing about the results of sin. Oh, by the way, one reason you do it is to go with the crowd. But the crowd won't be there long. Everybody in this room unmarried, listen to me. Some of you young ladies in this room tonight, what you want more than you want anything in this world is a male. Anybody's got pants on? I better change that. Anybody's got a beard? Anybody's got whiskers? You want a man. You'll drink to get a man. You'll leave your mom and dad to get a man. You'll take dope to get a man. You'll sell your purity to get a man. And I want to say something tonight. I want to thunder out from this pulpit like I've done through these years. Any man to whom you've got to sell yourself to get him, he's not worth having. You'll be back. You'll be back. They all come back. She laughed. I can see her now, sitting back in that section, laughing while I preach like this. Better watch the young folks that slide down like this. Boy, that means a whole lot more than you know. A whole lot more. Better watch them. And she'd snicker while I'd preach like this. She came back to my office in less than 2 years after she did that. I can see that fella walked up in this balcony right back here, and I can still see the leather jacket he had on. And the tie, or the collar that was open and no tie, I can still see him up there. And I can see her used to sit back here. And now she's up there sitting with him in that bout. Nothing wrong with sitting up there, but I can see her now. I saw him come in. I can tell he wasn't the right kind. But she was a little overweight. He was a immoral man, young man. But he wanted a decent wife. So he came to First Baptist Church of Hammond. Young people, you wait till you hold in your hands a little baby, and you wait until that little baby all of a sudden becomes the object of your dreams. And then all of a sudden, you say, let's go to church Sunday. We want our baby to turn out right. And you just wait till you have to take that little baby by yourself. And you just wait till he cusses you when you get home. She came back. They all come back. They all come back. She came back. She had a black eye. Eye was almost closed. She had bruises on her arms. She had a little baby in her lap. She said, Brother Hiles, and she pulled back this little bit, her sweater. And there was a bruise right there on the back of her neck. She said, oh, preacher, he's left me. He doesn't want me now. He's left me. He's beat me to a pulp. He's gone. I've got a baby, and I'm expecting another one. What will I do? Too late then. You'll do what she does. You'll die a little bit every day the rest of your life. That's what you'll do. And you'll try to tell the baby as he grows up where his daddy is. And you'll find some young man you want to go with, but ladies that have two little children are not in great demand. You'll be back. You'll come back. Your time will come. Now I say, do thyself no harm. And the only way in the world you can do yourself no harm in your life is to do God's will. Because the only safe place in this world, right in the middle of God's will. Did you know that God has a certain place for you to be? And no other place will do. And no other place is safe. God has a certain house in this world for you to live in. There's not a second choice that God will give you. There's one house in this world where God wants you to live. There's one occupation God has in mind for you. There's one school that God has for you to attend as a college student, as a high school student. There's one mate that God has for you. Oh, is she in knockout? Yep, she will be. Wow, he's a hunk of man. He'll be a big pot-bellied, beer-guzzling baboon like every other sinner is. He'll lose his hair and lose his waistline. You'll rue the day you didn't hear your preacher. Some of you folks are children of staff members. Playing the fool. Playing the fool. I'm not mad at you. I'm just standing up here one more time waving my handkerchief and saying in God's name, don't do it! Don't do it! Don't do it! Sin never turns out right! Your kids are breaking your deacon father's heart. Your dear mother, your Sunday school teaching mother, you're breaking her heart. Now the will of God for your life maybe poverty. But you know, poverty is not all so bad. I was in Tennessee this week. A preacher told me, he said, my daughter came to Howells Anderson College. But she left after 3 weeks. She got homesick. And then he said also, she said she did not ever want to marry a preacher. And I said, why? She said she's heard the slander preachers get. She's seen the tears preachers shed. She's seen the battles preachers have to endure. And she said, I won't marry a preacher. Now, I'm not saying you ought to marry a preacher, but you shouldn't say you won't do anything. It's just as wrong to say I won't marry a plumber. Anytime you put reservations on the will of God, you're doing yourself harm. Poverty is not so bad. Poorer you are, the more things you can enjoy. Other night, after the service, Linda and Cindy came by the office. Our two married, younger married girls. Mrs. McCarroll and Wally had been there that morning and left me my fruit. They come by every Sunday morning and Wednesday night. And they leave me some grapes and a package of carrots and some yogurt, and usually some orange or an apple or something. And Linda looked over and she saw a couple of bananas and a few oranges and some grapes. Been married now about 2.5 years. Her eyes got big. She said, Dad, could I have a banana? I said, well, of course. And Cindy said, could I have one too? Doc, I didn't know. I didn't know. Never dawned on me they don't have all bananas they want. But the salary is so small.
but just getting started in marriage. They walked over and I gave them each one a banana. You'd have thought I'd given them both a Cadillac car. And I got a couple of sacks, filled the sacks with bananas and oranges and Reese peanut butter cups. I got them in the attic. I got them in my hair. I got them everywhere. And I, and Linda said, "Oh, goody, 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 goody." And I envied her. I envied her. The fact that something as small as a banana could make her so happy. And folks bring me so much fruit, sometimes banana will sit in there on my desk that it rots. Don't envy the folks that got a lot of bananas. Monkeys aren't happy. You knew it was coming, didn't you? You saw it? Huh? You saw that one down the road coming, didn't you? And you'd be disappointed if I hadn't said it. Envy the folks that in the will of God do not have so much, but they can still enjoy it. It may carry burdens, but burdens only give you more chance to prove God. The will of God may bring confinement. That just gives you another chance to get closer to God. The will of God may mean that you'll have to sit beside someone who's a shut-in and care for someone who's an invalid, but that just gives you an easier way to find something to do for others and live for others. Do thyself no harm. Do thyself no harm, Christian man, in the holiday season. Don't listen to the temptations of the work. Do thyself no harm, dear lady. Don't watch the soap operas in the afternoons. Do thyself no harm. Do thyself no harm, dear sir, the temptation to take a little nip during the Christmas season. Do thyself no harm. Do thyself no harm, young lady. Do not, if he has to hug and kiss you before you get married, do thyself no harm. I want you to be able to write me a note when you get married and say, "Dear Brother Hiles," as I got a little note yesterday, "Dear Brother Hiles, thank you for teaching us the strict way to live. Thank you for starting Hiles Anderson College and bringing fine young men here, and thank you for teaching me how to stay pure and clean." Do thyself no harm. Young folks, nobody's trying to keep you from having fun. Honestly. Honestly. If I walked over to that door tonight and looked out that door and I saw a writhing reptile outside that door rattling his warning to you and you started to walk out that door, I'd say, "Don't do it. Don't do it." I've been preaching now for many, many years. I pastored a lot of people. I can look around this audience tonight and see people that listen to what I've said. I could count that many people, five people in the room tonight, who've had the wedding day set. Wedding was set. Something went wrong that caused them to have to call off the wedding if they did right. I've seen them find the list of people that gave them gifts and write them letters and say, "The wedding's off because it's not what I ought to do. God doesn't want me to do it." I've seen them who've already had their wedding dress. I've seen them look at their wedding dress. I've seen them take the ring off their fingers and hand the ring back to me and say, "Give it back to him. I know it's not right for me to have him." And I've seen the tears drop on my shoulder and drop in my office. And as they walked out, my heart broke because their heart was broken, but I knew it was right. In every single case, they sit here tonight, happily married people whom God has rewarded them with a lovely, lovely husband, a fine husband now and a lovely home. All but one case, and of course that has some time to prove itself yet. She's still young. It pays to serve Jesus. It pays every day. It pays every step of the way. Do thyself no harm. I'm not trying to get my way. I'm not trying to say to you, "I want my way. You do what I say." I'm not trying to wrestle you for authority. I'm not trying to fight you for power. I'm not trying to keep you from anything that's good for you. I'm trying to tell you that I've been down the road and I've seen what happens to people that don't listen to what's preached in this book. I've seen what's happened to people that go their own way and folks. If it's wrong for young people to sleep together, it's wrong for young folks to pet in a car together. If it's wrong for somebody to be an alcoholic, it's wrong to drink liquor. I get so sick and tired of these television ads and radio ads nowadays, Doc, that warn you about alcoholism. I can tell you how to stop it just like that. Put the Kennedys in jail for selling that stuff. Make it illegal. Well, you say you can't enforce it. Well, don't spend so much time trying to find me going 31 miles an hour then. Do thyself no harm. Trying to find parents. I don't blame my office about this. I'm trying to find parents right now who live outside the state and outside this area. Three babies being carried by girls 16 and under right now. A little girl came to my office the other day, a lovely girl, on a Sunday morning after the service. Goes to Hammond Baptist High School or did. She told me this story. I told her she couldn't go to school, of course. She put her head in her arms like this and began to sob uncontrollably. Do thyself no harm. Obey. Live right. Live pure. And make it so when the time comes when you walk down the aisle, young ladies, make it so that when your father extends his arm to you and you walk out the door up there, walk down or walk across there and back down the aisle, make it so that every one of us who are here can rejoice with you. Make it so that we can feel real good in here about it and reach up and look at your groom and say, honey, I saved myself for you. And let him feel like that you're just a brand new package that he's unwrapping at Christmas time. Put a sign on the outside of your body and say you can't unwrap to the wedding. And young men, there's still a way to live where you can save yourself. Where you can stand at the altar and extend your arm, let it be clean and pure. There's still a way. I know it's a hard era. I know. I know about Playboy. I know about Penthouse. I know about Hollywood. I know about television. I know about that. But you can still live right. You can still live right. I beg you in God's name, do thyself no harm. Heavenly Father, again, in another way, I've tried to appeal to the conscience of people. Oh, my, to see them as they disregard the sign that says warning, bridge is out, and plunge foolishly toward sin, unhappiness, broken hearts, wrecked lives. It's awful discouraging sometimes, except about the time I want to throw in the towel, I look at some clean, fine couple and say, hallelujah, it works for some. I pray tonight you'd speak to the hearts of those who've done themselves harm or about to do themselves harm. Our heads are bowed.